here's what I'd recommend to any student, regardless if you're in a university program or a boot camp. What you want to start doing is developing your communication skills, because no matter what is going to happen, like a big part of being a designer is being able to get support for your designs, whether you're a graphic designer, a UX designer, whatever, like insert type of designer here. You need to be able to talk with stakeholders and get their support on your designs. So how do you start practicing for that? Well,
hello and welcome to the AIGA Design Podcast. My name is Lishan Huang, Senior Director of Learning and Programs here at AIGA, the Professional Association for Design. Our guest today is Colton Schweitzer. He's the co-founder of Kickass UX, an organization on a mission to help graphic designers and other creative professionals become UXers who excel at overcoming subjectivity so they can make a big impact. Colton, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm stoked to be here.
I'm curious to learn more about this overcoming subjectivity. But first, I want to learn a little bit more about you and get some context about how Kickass UX, which has a kickass name, came to be. So a bit about your background. You are a self-taught graphic designer. You were inspired by Banksy to start making your own stencils. So can you tell us more about how you got into design?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, my mom has always been a really creative person. And so she always inspired my brother and I to play music, to do art, whatever we could do. My mom is an excellent artist. And so I was exposed to that from an early age. But there aren't really classes in school unless you do extracurriculars that are like around art. Mm-hmm. And so I eventually got into wood shop in high school. And I didn't know what to build. And I wasn't inspired by building anything at that time in my life. And so I loved Banksy stuff. I thought it was beautiful and like so like inspiring, thought-provoking. And so I decided to just use Photoshop on the computers to then create my own stencils. And then I would create them out of wood. Like I would grab these tiny little pieces of wood and I would use a jigsaw. And I created, gosh, I don't know how many stencils. And so that's what got me into designing and graphic design in particular, was creating a bunch of different stencils and like kind of putting my own spin on it. And then being able to use those in places. And I was never someone who went out and put it on random spots. But like, yeah, we just use them on like shirts and other things like that. It was super fun.
That's awesome. And so you also started making other things beyond stencils. You told me that you built your own board game from scratch. And in doing so, you realized that you were actually following the UX process without knowing it at first. And this board game also helped you land interviews for design jobs after you graduated from a boot camp. Love to learn more about the bootcamp in a bit as well, but you weren't getting responses from your job applications. And then you added this to your portfolio as like another thing. And then that landed you your first job. So love to learn more about this board game thing and how it's helped you.
The game was called Son of a Blank. Basically out of college, I had a dead end job. I did not like what I was doing and there was no opportunity for movement upwards. And like, I just saw myself kind of in this position where I couldn't go anywhere and I had no opportunities. And so at that time, Cards Against Humanity and Exploding Kittens were blowing up, pun intended. And I saw them making millions of dollars. I was like, okay, I can do that. I love board games. I've made them all my, I've been playing them my entire life. I've never made one, but like, how hard could it be? Mm-hmm. And so I talked to a couple of friends about what they would go after, because I had a couple of friends who were software engineers and whatnot at that time. And I was telling them my idea and they were like, oh yeah, you should like keep it really low fidelity. And so that's what I did. Like I use a bunch of note cards to create the game. I use pads, like yellow pads and pens. And I did so much usability testing. I did so many competitive analyses of like other games that are similar. Like what ended up happening is I built the game following the UX process without realizing it. Like I just kind of naturally did that. I started with interviews. I did the competitive analysis. Like I said, I did like usability testing like crazy, like to the point where at my birthday, it kind of came like a small house party that was unintended. I think I'd invited like 7 or 8 friends and they invited some people. And so there was like 20 people at this house party. And so we did like a usability test with my game, like just to see how well it would play with that many people. And yeah, I did a bunch of stuff like that. Eventually I kept building more and more prototypes. I worked with a manufacturer to create the real thing. And eventually I sold it on Amazon and eventually sold out on Amazon and stopped producing it because it was like a lot of work to do it.
Right.
But in doing that, like I realized, oh my God, this is so much fun. How do I keep doing it? And a friend was like, oh, that's called UX design. I was like, oh my gosh, like this is what I need to be doing. And so I did all the research I could. I ended up in a boot camp kind of like you talked about. And then like after the boot camp, after I had, you know, a couple different case studies from the boot camp, I wasn't getting any callbacks. But when I added my board game, like you mentioned, that's when I started getting callbacks, because it showed that I could naturally follow the process and I had something that stood out. Like no one else had anything like that on their portfolios. And so I'm happy to dive into that more, but that's like the Cliff Notes version of that.
I think you started alluding to one of these issues with boot camps, which is kind of sometimes the graduates have like cookie cutter portfolios. Mm-hmm. You had a great boot camp experience, as you've told me, but you've also identified some gaps in how UX is taught, which eventually led you to start Kick-Ass UX. So can you tell us more about some of these common issues that you see in both boot camp curricula as well as the portfolios that are coming out of some of the graduates?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to dive into it. So first of all, I want to say it's not just boot camps. It's also a lot of university programs have this exact problem. So what I'm about to say applies to a lot of them as well, in a general sense, not necessarily the specifics. Mm-hmm. So for my boot camp experience, I went to General Assembly. I went in like 2015, I believe. The reason I had a good experience is because I had two excellent teachers and they were wonderful. And subsequently after that, I know that they both left and then they, like, GA has hired on people that were less and less experience in a lot of cases, or like there's a lot of other issues that I've seen. Now, that said, like, I guarantee you there's gonna be excellent teachers that GA has, just like other boot camps will have excellent teachers. So it's not like, what I'm saying, it's not a blanket statement for everyone that's there by any means. So for my experience, just to give you an idea, like what they had us do is we had to build out four separate case studies. Well, actually, sorry, it was three. The fourth was building your portfolio. Like, you did one that was solo, then you work with a team on one. Both of those first two are pre-canned case studies, meaning that they were given to us. Like, it was not like there wasn't like a real problem necessarily that we discovered. And then the last one was with a real client. And that was cool. Like, that was cool to have that experience. And it was with three other UX designers working on the exact same project. And so anyway, when I came out, basically all my projects are the exact same as at least three other people, if not six other people in my program. And that's a significant problem. Mm-hmm. And that's something that happens for most bootcamps. So that's one of the big problems, is that you can spot a bootcamp portfolio from a mile away because you can see that they have these pre-canned projects that are all like not that realistic. The other part of that is they don't spend very much time on portfolios and they don't really help people understand what they should put in them. And so you can already see a bootcamp portfolio because they all look the same. They use the exact same information. They look like a checklist. And so that checklist piece is the next part about the problem with bootcamps. So bootcamps are really awesome at imparting a lot of knowledge in a short period of time. Like, that's what makes them successful. They teach you the breadth of knowledge. They do not teach you the depth of knowledge, though. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, students know what to do, but they don't know why they do it. So they don't have kind of that why reflex of why should I do this thing over that? Like, and what will this help me learn? And like, why would that I do this one over this, like do this thing over this thing? And then like, how will that lead to my next decision? It's a serious problem. At the end of the day, UX is a critical thinking process. Like, you don't do something because you think you ought to. You do it because it'll help you get the answers you need to move to the next position that you need to be in, that then, you know, keep doing that over and over, you'll have a solution. So yeah, so checklisting, like creating things like a checklist, that's a problem. And then like a lot of times as well is they don't really help you learn visual design. Like at the end of the day, there's a huge debate in the UX community about UI and UX and la la la.
Right. Like what is the crossover in that Venn diagram? And it's like all very controversial and it depends on the company and the team.
Yeah. So like the way that I look at it is UI is a subset of UX. Like UX is a very large bucket. It is like this experience that people have like from like all touch points really of a company or product. And so like UI is a part of that. So like you can't really talk about UX without actually including UI in that conversation. Now, I think the problem that people have is like it is a tough skill set to build, like UI design. Like it takes a little bit to get there. And so people are like, oh, they're just too different to having the same skill set. I completely disagree. I think that it's necessary that like as a UX designer, you need to be a competent UI designer. That's like our take. And that's how we teach our students, is the exact same way. Like we teach them to be UX generalists / which is also known as product designers at this point. But anyway, coming back to boot camps and universities, those are the really, really big problems. The other one is they don't really help you connect like with like some people, some places are good at this, like connecting with job like employers and whatnot and like what to do, like how, but they don't tell you like how to network, how to talk with others, how to kind of get out there. So you kind of leave you on your own. One of the reasons that like I had a decent experience in my boot camp was they had a career coach basically at the end who helped connect you with companies, and he helped me connect with the company I eventually landed a job with. Like that took a while to get there, like, you know, it's a whole long process. of getting there. So like that was a really positive thing, but they would have passed me over had it not been for my board game, just like that happens to a lot of students. But subsequently, since then, that guy who had run that had been a recruiter, so he had a ton of experience, and so like and he knew a lot of people in the area. He left, and then they have brought on people that aren't as qualified for that, like connecting others. And so at the end of the day, right now, I am sure many listeners probably know, the UX job market is insane right now. Like mm-hmm. There's just been a lot of layoffs. There's not a lot of positions available. And so you're competing against more senior designers for those positions. And so like that's obviously really tough. And so I know that people are coming out of boot camps and they're struggling to land jobs. And so if you don't have a really awesome portfolio that shows off that you can solve real business and user problems, you're going to have a tough time landing a job. And that means that everything that you do needs to look excellent.
Yeah. There's a lot to dive into from what you've shared, which is amazing. I wanted to reflect on a little bit of it before we move on to the next question. But I think it's helpful to just have a little bit of this context. You said you did General Assembly in 2015 or so, and it was definitely an era where these boot camps were popping up all over the place and really blossoming because there was a shortage of design talent and companies just like couldn't find enough people, literally. Obviously, as you mentioned, we're in a very different labor market at the moment, right? Where there's lots of people who've been laid off or there's senior people that are probably getting rehired places more easily than junior people, or maybe there's just less demand now, or I guess there's more supply of designers than 8 to 10 years ago. So there's all of that that's worth looking at. And then you were talking about the curricula itself and how it can vary whether you're at a boot camp or at a design school. And obviously there's that trade-off between boot camps, which are cheaper, a lot less time commitment than a traditional design school or university program. But then the trade-off is you don't have the time to learn a lot of the stuff that's maybe the more like theoretical why that you can often get in an academic program, as well as just the time spent in the design studio or in a kind of virtual space. But you're immersed in design culture more if you're in a 4-year degree program or a 2-year master's program than a boot camp. So there's a little bit of that stuff. And so it seems like you were lucky in terms of getting it in other ways, but I'm curious to learn about what are your thoughts on that other stuff, right? Like the portfolio stuff, the being acculturated to being a professional designer kind of stuff. Like how do you think folks should learn that, or how do you teach that?
Yeah. So let's go back to that first part that you were talking about a second ago, which was about like jobs available and competing against others. So right now, I think is an especially hard time. I do think that's going to shift. I think that like right now in the United States and around the world, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on, which is causing a lot of problems. And like there's not as many jobs available, and companies have been more, they've been much more conservative with the way that they are approaching all this stuff. And so like, I do think that's going to shift. And I don't think that like there's been posts out there been like the UX industry is dying and stuff like that. It's like, that's not a thing. I don't believe that. So I just want to call that out first, is like injecting some hope for any listeners if they're trying to break into UX. Like, I do believe that if you keep at it, you will eventually land a job. I have never like ever not believe that. I believe that if you put your mind to it and you keep putting in the work, you will eventually get there. So that's the first thing. So coming back around to that second part that you were talking about, at boot camps, like you don't really get exposed to as much with as in a design school, just by the nature of time.
Sure.
Because like a boot camps, like it's just, you have typically 3 to 6 months max where you're with another group of people. And so you're not exposed to as much. And so I just want to make sure I understand, like, is there something in there particular that you want me to dive into? I'm happy to talk about those.
Yeah, I guess I'm curious about like ways to supplement that, right? You're like, you're not there for the same amount of time, but like some of the stuff that's like, you know, not core to the craft of UX, but still essential to being a successful professional in terms of whether it's the networking part or setting your portfolio apart, you know, from like just the typical curriculum dictated way of setting up a portfolio or case study or things like that, right? The like, because that's something I feel like design students in a longer degree program have more time to do of like developing their own style or their particular point of view.
Yes. Yeah, I think the biggest thing that's differing from, well, it's different from boot camps versus university programs in general is that are design critiques. So like at a university, you get used to having your work critiqued and you are part of that critique. Whereas in boot camps, that's not as common. Like there are plenty that do it. It's just, it's harder, right, when you have a short period of time to then go through all that. So typically how it works in a lot of them is that you're getting critiqued by the instructors. And it's not like you're giving pure critiques and you don't really have as many opportunities to provide critiques. There are plenty of boot camps that allow for this. So what I'm saying is, kind of, again, a blanket statement. It doesn't apply to all of them. It does apply to some of them. So I think that's one of the big differences. Here's what I'd recommend to any student, regardless if you're in a university program or a boot camp. What you want to start doing is developing your communication skills, because no matter what is going to happen, like, a big part of being a designer is being able to get support for your designs, whether you're a graphic designer, a UX designer, whatever, like, insert type of designer here. You need to be able to talk with stakeholders and get their support on your designs. So how do you start practicing for that? Well, start thinking through your design decisions. Like, you know, you start with a problem. If in UX, you start with a problem. And then you have to be able to figure out where to go from there. So you, like, let's say, for example, we're solving a problem for Airbnb, and, like, we're working on, let's say, a way to plan a group trip with others, like, that we can hop into Airbnb and do that in an effective way. So, like, we know that there's a problem that travelers can't do that very well in Airbnb right now. So what's the first thing that we might do? Well, we might go talk to people because we need to learn more about the problem. Or we might do a survey because, like, we maybe need to get certain type of information from that survey, like, something that's more numerical, something that provides more of the what is going on, not the why. Because, just as a quick aside, user interviews provide more why, more attitudinal data, where, like, people, like, about how they be, sorry, what they believe, not how they behave. And so, like, the point is, you start with a problem and you go to the next thing. So you have to think through, why did you make that decision? And then from there, like, you're going to learn some stuff, which is going to then tell you where to go next, or at least it's going to hint at where to go next. And so, point is that every decision along the way, you should be thinking about why you made that decision and document it. Because when it comes time to present your information, like, your designs to people, you can say, here's where I ended up and here's why. I ended there because these reasons. Like, I talked to these people said these things, like, the users believed X, Y, Z, they behaved in such and such way. And you can back up your design decisions. So, like, one thing would be communication in that way. So documenting along the way, and then you can practice that by, like, just talking to your friends about it. Talk to friends and family about it. Like, show them what you've done and present it to them, and, like, ask for genuine feedback. You also can use resources like ADP List for the exact same thing, where you hop on and talk to other designers and, like, present it to them. Present them your case studies, like, get their feedback on it. Because that way you can actually start getting people's reactions to what you're doing, and then you can kind of course correct from there. Because in general, like, when you're on a team, for most designers, like, from small to medium-sized companies, you're probably going to be on, like, a group of designers between, like, 2 to 10 in small companies. And it obviously gets much larger from there, depending on the UX team that you're on. But you're going to have to be able to get support for your designs and advocate for your designs and, like, also determine what you do and, like, what you do next, how you do it, like, all those things. And so starting to think about the why behind all of your actions is a huge part of communication. So that's one thing I'd tell all students, like, to be doing no matter what, is think about their why. Another one would be just getting out and networking with people, because I know it's kind of a pain to hop onto LinkedIn or other places and, like, actually just reach out and, like, build connections. But the better you get at that, at, like, reaching out to others and, like, providing them value, so that, and then they'll also provide it back, the better you'll be at A, finding jobs. But B, also, like, you'll build the skills of how to talk to others, like, how to communicate with others. And, again, that comes back to communication and, like, how you work with other people. So those are some of the soft skills I'd recommend anyone to start practicing, regardless if you're in a university program or a bootcamp. And that's actually all those things are, like, what we cover in our program. So we have lessons that are that cover these things. So in the beginning, we have a module called Communicating Design Decisions, which is all about going through your design decisions with stakeholders, like, how you go prepare for a meeting with them, like, kind of how you go through that. We also have a module on your portfolio, like, what to present, like, how to keep that all together, stuff like that. And I think I covered most of the question, but I also could have totally gone off the rails. So you have to tell me, Lishan, if I just totally blew that.
Oh, not at all. I feel like we can circle back to a lot of this stuff, because I feel like it's worth iteratively covering some of this. So getting back to Kick-Ass UX as your venture, do you guys consider yourselves a bootcamp, or it's some other kind of learning platform? Like, how do you talk about it?
Yeah. So we initially called ourselves a program. I think we still refer to ourselves as a program, but we've evolved from what we used to be. So it used to be that you'd join us for 6 months, like, roughly 7, including breaks that we had built in. And you'd build out two unique case studies that were entirely your own. And like you'd also build a portfolio by the end, or at least start on your portfolio, depending on your speed. And we recently changed that to being more of a community and course with like live rounds of feedback. And so that way it's more self-paced, anyone can join, and it's significantly cheaper than it was. And that way we're kind of helping a larger amount of people who are looking for quality education, but just can't find it and or can't afford it. And so we really pivoted our entire model. And so how it works now, like I kind of said, self-paced, like basically you come in, there's a community of others who are doing the exact same thing as you. We answer all questions within the community, like the course is right there. So you, if you have questions, you post them right there, or you can reach out to Ludovic or myself. And then we have calls twice a month with all of our students where you hop on a call with us, you tell us about what you're doing, what problems you're coming up against, what questions you have, and we answer them directly on the call. And that's how it works now. So it's much more autonomous than what it was before, but a lot of our students work together. So we have like kind of this automation built into our course that you can say, I want to partner up, and it helps you find others who are doing the same thing as you. So you have more accountability built in, you're getting feedback from others, all that stuff.
Hi, this is Editor Lee Sean chiming in from post-production. Colton has generously offered AIGA Design Podcast listeners $75 off your first month with Kickass UX. Just sign up at kickassux.com and use coupon code AIGA75 at checkout. That's AIGA75. Now back to our interview. We've talked a little bit before, but I'd love to learn more about this, about the niche that you're in terms of your target students, target learners. You help creatives like graphic designers break into UX, and often graphic designers are already coming to the table with solid visual communication skills, maybe in the way that the average bootcamp attendee who doesn't have a design background, you know, they may not have that, but graphic designers may need to learn all these other things that they didn't have before in terms of research skills and validating concepts with data, other sort of things like that. So why should graphic designers consider UX as like a, not necessarily a pivot, but maybe an extension of their skills? And then what are some of these things that graphic designers should take into account when they're learning UX?
So first of all, one of the reasons to learn UX, and I believe this for like basically every career out there, I believe should learn at least some of UX. And that is because the UX skill set can help you improve just about anything. It's like you discover a problem and then you follow a critical thinking, use your critical thinking to then determine like the best solution. And you do so through a lot of like scientific like methods to get there. And so that's one reason for graphic designers, is because, so we talked about subjectivity in the beginning, actually, this is kind of the perfect segue for that, which is graphic designers, one of their biggest complaints. So like before we started Kickass UX, we talked to like, 60 graphic designers or something like that, something crazy. And we learned a lot about what their problems were. And of course, having a graphic design background myself, like again, self-taught, I never employed as a graphic designer, but I know the problems that are faced, like from my own experience and now, of course, from talking to so many people. And so the thing that they deal with the most is subjectivity, or like that's the thing that they complain about the most, where they get a creative brief, they go into their creative mode, they do all of the work, and then they come back and they present to the stakeholders, and the stakeholders like, I don't like it, or make it bigger, or this should be red, not green, or, you know, insert subjective opinion here. And like the big frustration about that is like, okay, why do you want it that way? And most of the time people can't really explain why they want it that way. They just want it that way. And there's nothing you can do as a designer other than relying on design principles to say like, oh, based on the Gestalt principle of proximity, it should be like this, or, you know, whatever, like, you know, insert principle of reason here.
Right. Something that's beyond like your client's taste and what they like and don't like that day.
Exactly. And so the problem with that is that you can't do anything about that. Like there's nothing you can say to them that will convince them that what you've done is right. Now, of course, like they're a client, they're the person who's paying for it at the end of the day. Like I get that. And some things are never going to sway them. However, if you start speaking more of their language and you start including real data behind your decisions, like your design decisions, you're going to see a change. And that's what UX offers graphic designers. So even if you don't use UX, like you don't decide to become a UX designer, which one quick caveat, one side thing that has been really surprising to me is a lot of our students actually never plan on becoming UX designers. They just wanted to add it to their skill set. So we've had plenty of graphic designers who want to eventually be like creative directors that run teams and whatnot. And so they come and they learn from us so that they have that skill set for when they move up. So point is that like, once you have that skill set of understanding kind of how to get that information to back up your design decisions, you can come into these meetings prepared and say, hey, I actually got feedback on this from 5 target customers, and here's what they had to say. And so like you can back it up with data, or you can say like, here's what our competitors are doing. These are all the, like, you basically come in prepared with all of the reasons and data behind it. And like, if you can get KPIs up front, KPI stands for key performance indicator. If you're not familiar, like up front, when you're defining your project, you could say, hey, we're trying to increase this thing. Mm-hmm. Like we're changing the colors here because we want to do XYZ, or we're changing this thing because we want to do this. Track it afterwards. And then that way you can actually give a solid impact to the work that you've done. And that's like what UX is all about, is being able to track that stuff. It's being able to say, I know that we've had a measurable difference. Like we've been able to actually have a big impact on this thing by changing XYZ thing, or we made it more usable or whatever. And so that is one reason to consider adding UX to your skill set as a graphic designer. Another one is, if graphic designers actually do want to become UX designers, UX has a much larger ladder in a good way. You know, as a graphic designer, you come in, you might be a junior to begin with, depending on where you are, what kind of company, and then you work your way up to a senior eventually, which takes a long time typically. And then you might work your way into like a creative director role, and then maybe a senior creative director role. And like eventually that gets capped out and you're not going to be moving up higher than that. Whereas in UX, like there's a much larger ladder to climb, which means that you're not going to get like stopped. Like there's not going to be an artificial ceiling where you're out of the realm that you love doing. Like now you won't be doing as much design work as you move up that ladder. You're going to be doing much more strategic thinking, but like you get paid a lot more as you go up that ladder. And so, and that kind of leads me to the other third reason to consider it is, and again, even if you don't become a UX designer, but just offer UX things and you're like, as freelance designers, for example, can do this, like UX designers in general get paid a lot more. So I looked it up this morning just to be sure before we talked, because I hadn't looked for a little while. But in the United States, graphic designers make around $59,000 a year, according to Indeed. It's like 58 or 59, somewhere in there. And UX designers in their first year, or first two, 3 years, are expected to make around 89 to 90,000. But the average for UX designers is around 105. And so like, I mean, significantly more, almost twice as much in some cases. And that's just for a like standard graphic designer and standard UX designer. So obviously that'll shift up if you talk about seniors in both cases. But like, again, like that cap goes way higher as you start to get into senior territory. And the reason for that, at least in my opinion, is that UX designers have a significantly bigger impact on a business than a graphic designer. And I know some people can argue differently, saying like, oh, the branding, like that is really what makes up the company. And I agree with you on that. But as a UX designer, I can literally point to how my work has impacted the bottom line. A graphic designer has a much harder time doing that. Mm-hmm. And so like you'll have the research and you'll be conducting the research to then like show how your designs actually are impacting the company and the business. And that is huge. And that's, I think that's really the big difference between graphic design and UX, beyond the fact that like in graphic design, it's much more subjective a lot of the time. You can make it less subjective with things we've talked about. And then also the tie to the business. Like UX is at the center of business, technology, and the user. And so like business is a big part of being a UX designer.
For sure. And this is stuff that we've found at AIG as well. The last time we published on this was back in 2018, so pre-pandemic, but we found very similar things in terms of traditional print-based graphic designers make a lot less than designers working in software, was the term that I think the US Bureau of Labor Statistics was using, because they haven't updated those like government categories about different kinds of jobs. So there isn't actually like a UX, UI one or service designer checkbox according to the way that the US government like classifies different kinds of jobs. So it's like designers working in software, which includes UX designers for sure. And I think especially when you're working in digital spaces, right, like the web or mobile products and stuff like that, like being able to track stuff, like your metrics are much more visible and intelligible to folks on the business side than like a print piece that you do, or like packaging or things like that, that are important holistically to a brand, but it's harder to track that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
So in terms of the process of UX itself, you know, we've talked a bit about this already. You learned it creating your board game back in the day. We talked about this in a previous conversation preparing for this recording about the metaphor of the treasure hunt versus a checklist. And I think you mentioned this a little bit earlier about the checklist being kind of limiting, right?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, it's helpful for teaching designers, like when they're learning, like, oh, make sure you do all of these steps. But real world design work isn't linear. It's not just like checking all the boxes and you're good. So can you tell us more about this treasure hunt metaphor and what that means for the design process?
Yeah. So I'll first start by describing one of my favorite movies, The Count of Monte Cristo. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's such a wonderful movie. And in it, like Jim Caviezel is the main character, Edmond Dantes, and I think it's his name. It's been a little while since I've seen it, but basically he goes to prison for something that he shouldn't have been there for. And he found this map for treasure. So he escapes eventually, and then he follows that map. And basically how it works is you grab the map, and this, we all think of treasure map, and you have a starting point. And then from there, you go to that starting point, and then you can only determine where you go next from that point. Like, it kind of like you go here, and then you can see where to go to next. And so that is very much the case for The Count of Monte Cristo. He'll go to these different spots. He's like, oh, I'm there. And then he knows where to orient based on where he's at. And eventually he ends up at the treasure. So the same thing applies in UX. So the starting point on your map is your problem. And so, like, if you think about UX as a treasure hunt, like, that is exactly what this is. So, like, the starting point on your map is your problem. And from there, you already will get a lot of information from that problem if you frame it properly, which is something that we teach, is like, how do you frame the problem so you know generally where to be going? So from that, you're going to have questions that you need to have answered. And that will point in the direction of what kind of methods to use. So for example, we talked about the Airbnb example earlier, where, like, let's say we're solving for group travel. Well, there's going to be a lot of questions that we have, like, how many people actually would want this? Like, what type of person would use this feature? How often would they use this feature? Like, what kind of things would they expect in this feature? Insert a ton of other questions here. So all of those questions can only be answered in a certain way. Some of them can only be answered by talking to people. Some can be answered by, like, let's say I worked at Airbnb and I had their data. I could actually look at how people are behaving now. Like, I could do usability testing depending on the problem or what's going on here. Like, there's a lot of different ways to solve it, but the problem is going to already tell you generally, and the questions that you get from that, where you go first. And then whatever you do in that, so let's say I do user interviews, like, I'm going to learn a lot of stuff from that. And I might have more questions, or maybe I've already answered most of my questions. And so from there, I might already know what to do. And so I go over to, like, for example, sketching. Like, I already generally know what to be doing next. I'm sketching. Mm-hmm. And so then, like, from sketching, I'll be moving on to wireframing and eventually to visual design. But let's say I still have questions, which you probably will. It's like, I want to make sure that I validate this, that this is actually what they're asking for. So you then go to usability testing, where, like, you test people and make sure that what you created makes sense. And then from there, maybe you got it right, maybe you didn't. And so, like, again, kind of come back to this treasure map, like, you do the thing that makes sense, like, based on the questions that you have and what you know already. That one choice will lead you to an answer of some kind, which then will lead you to the next direction that you're heading. And you keep doing that over and over and over until eventually you get to a solution. In that scenario, you don't do something because, right? You are doing something because it makes sense, and you only ever do it because you have a question to be answered, or, like, in some way, or, like, there's a gap that you need to fill. You're not doing it because the boot camp told you to. Like, you're not doing a survey just because you think you ought to do a survey. You're not doing user interviews because you think you need to do user interviews. You do them because you need to answer something. And so, like, by contrast, the checklist is what we just talked about a little bit ago. It's like, I do all of the things in the process because that's what I think I should do to get to the answer. It's like, no, that's not it. And it, just real quick, another metaphor that I absolutely love for UX is kind of like the UX Kung Fu master. Mm-hmm. So, like, in a lot of old films and just in general fantasy books, like, the Kung Fu / like fighting master is someone who only uses the exact amount of energy and movement necessary to dodge or, like, throw a punch or whatever. And so, like, you see them in the films where they dodge by, like, a hair's breadth or something like that. And that's all they needed to move. Like, UX is the same way. Think of yourself as a Kung Fu master, where, like, you're only using the right amount of energy, the right amount of movement to get out of the way. So that means, like, you're only doing the necessary methods, the necessary actions to actually eventually win the fight, which would be building your solution.
Yeah. I love that second metaphor as well. I've actually, like, seen something like this in real life. I used to do capoeira, which is a Brazilian martial art.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And I was, like, training here in the US, but also in Brazil. And we were visiting this group where it was this, like, totally jacked Brazilian dude. And he was, like, literally, like, flipping around and doing stuff. And he was, like, playing capoeira, sparring against this, like, older master who is, like, a middle-aged woman, more heavy set, but obviously been doing this for decades as well. And, like, The young guy was like flipping around, doing all of this sort of stuff that looked cool. And then just at the right moment, he was like on the ground. Like, I don't even know what the master did, but it was like, okay, she looked slow. It looked like she wasn't doing something, but like she just had the technique and the timing down, and whatever this acrobatic dude was doing, like she found the right vulnerability. And I think that's like, yeah, just such a vivid way of thinking about this too. It's like, why waste your time on processes where you already know the answer? Like, yes, maybe you already have the data, or it's not relevant to your question. So like, focus your time on things that actually help you move the needle and not just checking the boxes.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's so cool you had that experience. I always wanted to learn, I always pronounce it wrong, I guarantee it, but capoeira?
Yeah, capoeira.
Capoeira. Yeah, I've always wanted to learn. I always looked at it as like, God, that looks cool.
It is pretty cool. It's tough on my 40-something body now, so I don't do it much anymore. But yeah, it was very cool, and yeah, got to do it for like a decade.
That's so cool. I love that.
So we've been talking about the design process. This is kind of a meta question, but you're applying that UX design process, that design process in general, to your venture itself, right? Kick-Ass UX, you said you launched it originally as this 6-month or so structured course. Now it's more kind of learn at your own pace online. And so can you talk about like how you've been evolving that pedagogical model and that business model based on what you've been learning from your students?
Yeah, you know, it is very meta. We do use the UX process on what we've been building from the very beginning. We started with like, you know, problem statements. We interviewed just so many people to get a really good idea of what we needed to be doing, what kind of problems we were facing. So like in the very beginning, we talked to like, I don't know, 50 or 60 people who had gone through a boot camp or a university program and learned what went well, what didn't go well, and like all the things that they wish they would have had, basically. And so we based a lot of what we created on that, plus our own experiences, because I had taught myself and went to boot camp, and Ludovic only taught himself. And so we had those experiences to draw on. So yeah, we started off as more of a boot camp style. Again, we called ourselves a program because we didn't want to be lumped in with other boot camps because we didn't do things the same. But what we saw was that people had trouble with committing 6 months at a time. Even though we were part-time, people could keep their jobs. Like that's always been the case for us. That was something that we continually saw. I was like, oh, I'd love to join you guys, but I can't make it work for my schedule. And so that was one of the big problems. And the other one is just because it's 6-month really intensive time, like we knew that we were excluding a lot of people with the price point that we had. Like it just, people couldn't afford what we were doing. And now to be fair, we were cheaper than every other primary bootcamp by like a large portion, and way cheaper than every university program out there. Right. So like from a price point standpoint, like we were still low in the market, but too high for many people. And so basically we kept hearing feedback about that. And so we were like, okay, what can we do differently that A, will set us apart from others, but B, like provide a really good experience for students, but also make them feel supported by us. Like they have mentorship of some kind that they're getting from us, that they're getting feedback, that it's not just like another course they come in, they don't actually take action, because we do not want that. And actually as a bit of background, we ran an alpha on our program. When we first came out, we had 10 students do it. And initially it was all self-paced. People didn't go through as a cohort and they didn't meet as a group. And we only saw of the 10 people who had access that wanted to do it, only 3 people actually completed it. And so we knew that there was going to be a problem with completion if we went to just a straight course model. And so like we were like, we need to do something different. So that's how we ended up in the cohort-based model. And then we subsequently pivoted to this new model, like we just talked about a little bit ago, where it's, you know, we meet twice a month as a group, we respond to all comments in the community, and we help students partner up with one another. And so it is self-paced now.
Right. It's kind of option C as the synthesis of the first two models.
Exactly. And so far, it's been really awesome. There's going to be people who come in who just want to learn a little bit and move on. And so people can kind of come in and it's like more like a la carte, where I can just pay for 1 month, learn if I want to, and then hop out. But for the most part, people are coming in and they're engaging and like actually sticking around. They're helping one another. And so, yeah, like for example, we had 2 students who joined when we first opened up this version in, I think we opened up in July. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But they started a business together, actually a design studio together based on what they were learning, because they both had experience within, like one of them was a developer and graphic designer and the other one was just a graphic designer. And they both, you know, obviously went to UX, and they started offering their own basically studio to offer all those services together. And they met through our program and like So that's one awesome story that came from the most recent version of this. That's kind of how we've evolved, and we've done so the entire time through feedback. We're always asking students what their experience is like. We're always looking at the market, what others are doing, but really we're trying to make sure that our students have the best possible education that they could, and that they're getting feedback from us, and that they're feeling confident. Like, the real goal of our program is for them to walk away feeling confident in their skills, because just far too many people come out of boot camps now that aren't feeling confident in their skills, and they're feeling just as lost when they went in. Like, we have had quite a few students who've gone to the top boot camps and other competitors of ours who then come to us afterwards because they've felt so frustrated with their experience, and then they walk away feeling way better.
And it also sounds like your new model is kind of embodying this treasure hunt versus checklist model in the curriculum too, right? Because if you have something that's like super structured and linear, like if you come in, especially as a creative professional, already knowing something, like why sit through that module when you can just skip to the next thing and like get the parts that you need?
Yeah.
Right. So I think it embodies that really well. So yeah, I'd love to hear like one more success story and then we can get to the final question.
Yeah. So I'll tell a success story in just a second. What I wanted to say is like kind of how we've always structured it. We try to make it feel kind of more of that treasure hunty way, even in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And when you're first learning, no matter what, in UX especially, you're going to have to learn it in a linear fashion just because you need to know what methods are there. You just need to learn why you do them. So in our very first project, we have students, and this goes for this now and others, we teach it like, hey, you need to be thinking about the why. And the very first project, they go through all the methods that they could. And then the next case study, they have a shortened period of time where they have to choose what they do, because that way they actually can learn the why behind it. And like, they use their critical thinking to get to the end. So we kind of have that baked in throughout because we want to make sure that they're developing that why skill set. So coming back around to success stories. So we've had actually only in the last week, one of our students from our first cohort, she has been a graphic designer for a long time. And she just landed a job as a UX designer, which is awesome. I forget exactly the company that she's working for now, but I mean, this kind of tells you the state of the job market right now. She had been looking for a while. But like the thing is, she kept working on her stuff. Like after she got out of our program, she did a bunch of volunteer projects and whatnot. And she kept adding to it, like built off the foundation that we helped her build. And then another student, he was a graphic designer for Amazon, and he was able to pivot into a role as UX designer at Amazon. And so like there's many others that are similar to that, where people like kind of are moving into roles that are like that allow them to do that. They're like, for example, another student who worked at a real estate company, she still is doing graphic design work for them, but is now also doing UX work. And she also got a pay bump from it as well, because she's doing both of those things. And so it's kind of like a one size fits all kind of success. Like everyone gets like a job. It's not necessarily that. It's like you pick how you want this to work out for you and it'll happen.
On that theme of constantly learning, what is something that you've learned recently? It could be a fact, a skill, an insight or something. And how did you learn it?
Ooh, that's a great question. One thing I'm kind of relearning in general is I think it's important to have something outside of your primary pursuits that you're going for that isn't like one of the things that matters most in your life. And what I mean is like family to me is my number one. It always has been. It always will be. I am lucky enough that I have like my wife and I have a son, and I have a daughter on the way, which I'm very excited about. They are my number one. And then my number two outside of family and friends is obviously Kick-Ass UX and my work and doing that. And that's great.
Right.
But the thing about that is that like those two things are great, but I feel like having something else that you are passionate about or excited about, whatever it is important. And so I don't know if you've seen me a couple of times, but I have this like little strengthener in my hand that I use during meetings. I just got it. In 2019, I started learning an instrument called the Irish Bouzouki. It's an instrument that's adapted from, I think it's the Greek bouzouki, or I forget exactly. But anyway, it's this beautiful sounding instrument. It sounds very Celtic, very folk-ish. And I've always, like, I have produced music for a while. We kind of talked about that in one of our previous conversations. And one of the more realistic sounding synthetic stringed instruments in Logic is the Irish bouzouki. And I always liked the sound. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to buy one. And so I randomly bought one in 2019, had never played a stringed instrument in my life, and started learning. Well, I had an instructor while we lived in Seattle. And the pandemic hit and I like stopped seeing the instructor and I stopped playing. Well, I just pulled it back out this last week because I wanted my son to like be able to strum on it and just see. And honestly, like just having something like that, that's a creative pursuit that's outside of the primary things that you're trying to do, I think is so important. I think it adds a level of depth and excitement outside of the things that you really care about. And it also is like a stress reliever. There's like so many positive things. And it's also like about growth. Like you're learning something else. Like you can give yourself some grace because you're learning something that's completely new. And like as a side benefit, and one of the reasons I wanted to do it now is that I could show my son and my eventual daughter that like I am learning, like I'm still learning things. Like I'm not going to be good at the things that I'm doing all the time, and that's okay. Like everyone needs to start somewhere, and that's natural. So I think that's probably what I've learned recently, or at least relearned recently, and have been stoked about.
That's awesome. I think it's so important, especially for creative professionals, creative entrepreneurs like you and myself, to have some other creative outlet that's like not our job.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, just to have that thing and like, or sometimes it's even good to have something that you kind of suck at. Like I was never really good at capoeira, or like I have a ukulele just off camera here too.
I love it.
So it's like, I'm not going to be like making money off of that anytime soon or subjecting anybody to that anytime soon, but it's like just, nice to have that pursuit.
Yeah. Well, you know, like kind of along the same lines, for a long time I did a cat comic called Kitty AF, and I garnered a pretty large audience, in particular on Facebook, of like 125,000 people. And I stopped doing it for the last few years, but I just started again kind of as another side project where I'm creating this book for the holidays based on a lot of the comics I'd already done. But just having that on the side has been super fun. And it's something that I had put away for a while and not even thinking about, but just having it just to do it. Like, I don't care if it actually works out or it makes money or whatnot. Like it's like a separate goal that's outside of my job that like provides excitement in some way. And like, yeah, that's something that's so important. But I know we're about to hop off, but I have to turn the question back to you. Like, what's something that you learned recently? Or like a skill, fact, insight, like, and how did you learn it? And like, yeah, I'd love to hear about that.
Well, most recently, you actually taught me just before we hit record on this podcast how to make cold brew coffee at home, because I've been like buying the concentrate from the grocery store, but I didn't realize it was as simple as putting coffee grounds into my French press, which I already own, with room temperature water and letting it go overnight on the counter. So I'm going to try that and save money on those instead of buying those $10 concentrate mixes from the grocery store.
Yeah. Stoked to hear it. I can't wait to hear what you think about that. And just as a quick, for anyone else who's curious about that, all you have to do, grind up coffee at night, put it in a French press, fill it up, put the press on top, don't press it, and let it sit until you wake up in the morning or whenever you want to have your coffee, and press it, and boom, it's great. It's great every time.
All right. Well, Colton Switzer, dropping the design advice, the creative life advice, the caffeination advice. Thank you so much for joining us here on the AIGA Design Podcast. And thank you for listening all the way through. And for AIGA members, your support makes programming like this possible and available to the entire design community. And so I'm Lishan Huang, and I will talk to you next time.
Thank you so much, Lishan.